regret to be calm. And then I remembered a story that I heard another Christian scientist give once when I was in Boston. He said that he was the COP for a very large area. And one day he had a special meeting to attend. It was a very important meeting. And his little boy, about 5, was very ill. His wife was also a Christian Science practitioner, and they had both been really working about this problem. But the situation got worse. And he was about to go into the meeting when his wife called, and she said, "I think you better come home, because this looks very serious to me." He said, "Well, I'll pray about it." And he said he came in and he sat down at his desk and he prayed sincerely that God would give him an answer and show him what to do. And he opened his Bible at the book of Ruth and he read these words, "There is a kinsman nearer than I." And he thought that those words were so wonderful. "There is a kinsman nearer than I." Then he thought, why, that's the truth. God is the true father and mother of that child. He is his only kinsman, and he is nearer than I could ever be. And I'm going to trust that child to his care, and I'm going to go about my father's business. And he went into this meeting and came out, got in his car, and drove home, and as he got to his own house, the little boy and his wife ran down the driveway to meet him. That story had impressed me so much because of the beauty in those words, and I saw this as an opportunity to just put that into operation in my own experience. So I began to know that there was indeed a kinsman nearer than I. He was nearer than her breath, closer than I could ever be. And he was right there, and I was going to trust him to take care of them both. So I went out and gave my lecture, and every truth in that lecture I applied to that situation at home. And when I came home, I called my daughters again, even though it was the middle of the night there, and the daughter who had been ill answered the phone, and she shouted, "Mommy, Mommy, I'm healed." I was completely healed half an hour after I spoke to you on the phone. And she said, the doctor came back and I opened the door for him and he said, "How is your sister now, dear?" Wasn't that a lovely proof of God's tender love, caring for me and mine? I tell you, it did something for my lectures because it helped me to see that I had proved once again what I was saying. So another time I was in England and I hadn't been feeling good and I had to travel from the north of England to the south of England. A friend was driving me by car. It was a very hot day. We're not used to heat waves and we had a heat wave on that day. And I had my purse with me and in the purse I had about $800. And I needed that money to pay for the hotel for my friend and I. And we stopped at a service place to have a cold drink. It was a bank holiday and this place was crowded with people. And my friend said to me, "You sit on the grass and I'll go and get the drink and bring it out." So I sat on the grass and she brought out the drink. And we got up, got into the car, and I had left my purse on the grass with all this money in it. Now we had to be at a certain place at a practitioner's home by 5 o'clock and it looked like we were not going to make it. And I was getting quite disturbed about this because she had a group of young people that she wanted me to meet. After a while I had to ask my friend to stop the car again and I got out, was being sick. And I said, what on earth am I going to do? How am I going to get there in time? And this thought from the lesson sermon that week came to my thought. It said, "It is I, be not afraid." And I thought, I'm just going to accept that. It is I. Even in this situation, where I seem to be not feeling well and had to get to a certain place for a certain time, I'm going to say, "It is I, be not afraid. He is in complete control of my life and my lecturing and everything connected with it. And he's complete control of my friend's home and whatever's going on there. So I lay on the grass for a while. I had a little sleep and I felt better. And we got up and we drove to our destination. But we had just missed these young people. They had to go before we came. But because I wasn't feeling good and looking good, in a way I was glad. I didn't want them to see me like that. So I went straight into my friend's house and she had prepared a bedroom for us. And I went in there and lay down on the bed. And I suddenly remembered that I had left my purse behind. And this was a couple of hundred miles down the road. So I told my friend that I was staying with, and she said, "Oh my goodness, we better call the police." And I said, "Be not disturbed. It is I. We're not going to be disturbed. The God who's taking care of me and all of us is taking care of that person." So she called the police. We thought that was the right thing to do. And the police said, "What on earth was she doing with that amount of money in her bag?" He said, "She has no chance of getting that back on the bank holiday and leaving it on the ground." But he got the police in that area, which was called Birmingham, to go and see if they could find the purse. And they asked around everywhere and no one had found it. And my friend, she said, "Well, I'll lend you some money if you need it." And I said, "No, I know it's all right. It is I, be not afraid. And I'm not going to be afraid or let it disturb me." And I went out that evening and I gave my lecture. And when I came home, I went to bed. And the next morning, I had a call from the police. And they said, "You're never going to believe this. We found your purse. It has been handed in to a police station. The money's intact. Your cards are there. Nothing has been touched." They gave me the telephone number of the man who had found my purse. And I called him, and as I spoke to him, I could hear all these little children in the background. And he told me he found the purse on the grass, but something told him not to hand it in at that place. So he took it in his car, and he said I was going to take it to my local police station and hand it in. But that was away in Cornwall, which was very far away from where I was. And he said that when he was passing a town called Oxford, it was 10:30 at night, and he thought if the police stopped him for any reason and they found that purse, they might think that he had stolen it. So he decided to hand it in at the next police station, which was a city called Oxford. And that's where it was. He said, "You can go there and pick it up." And I said, "Well, do you know that Oxford is the place I'm lecturing tomorrow?" Wasn't that wonderful? And I said that I would send him a reward. And I said, "It was so honest of you, because I hear all those little children and I'm sure you could have used that money." And he said, "I know I could, and I was very tempted, but I knew it wouldn't do me any good." Wasn't that another lovely proof of God's tender love, his loving care? I've had so many of them that we just wouldn't have long enough to tell you all about them. Now, how are we for time? Would anybody like to ask any questions? Well, I didn't think they were shy in California. No, she told me that she worked very simply. She simply worked to know that God was the only mind. And she never once thought about the bromide, and neither did I. And I think that that's the most wonderful part of her healing, because it cuts right through every law, every belief. You know, that bromide had damaged her. And when she was healed, she never went back onto that medication. She never took tablets anymore. Oh, sorry. Right.
We, of course, are interested as Christian scientists in having a healing influence in other parts of the world where there's a need for healing. And, of course, you've had a privilege of of working in the problems of the Northern Ireland situation. Now we hear a lot about somewhat similar problems in the former Yugoslavia and in Somalia and other parts of Africa. And I personally know of some problems around the borders of the former Soviet Union, which are similar kinds of struggles between people. And I wonder from your experience in Northern Ireland if you can share some ideas that we might use in working for healing in these areas.
Well, I think it's just what we've been discussing. It's loving those areas. Some years ago when troubles in South Africa were very bad, I felt that I should pray for that country. And I prayed for the country and I prayed for the practitioners and teachers who were there and all the Christian Scientists, that they were sufficient to meet the needs of that country. And I knew that it didn't matter if the belief was black and white or Catholic or Protestant. It was nothing but a belief in a power apart from God, and a belief that people are different. We're all God's children. So I embraced that country in that love and knew that they were all God's children, and God was taking such wonderful loving care of them. And do you know, late that night, about 11:30, I had two calls right after the other, and they were both from that country, people wanting help. Now, I've never had a call from that country before, and it showed me the power of thought. We really are ambassadors for Christ. To sit at home and reach out and embrace any situation in this love is doing more than you know. And mortal mind tries to give us the runaround and says, oh, but we should be up humanly doing something. It's not the human doing that does it. Years ago, my only sister's husband was crippled with arthritis, and she had an awful job nursing him. They were not Christian Scientists, and they didn't want anything at all to do with Christian Science. And she was so small and little, and she had such a job nursing him and caring for him and doing everything. Well, one day she called me, and she said that she hadn't been feeling good, and she didn't know how she was going to cope with her husband. And I said, would you not have him put in the hospital for a couple of weeks just to give you a rest? And she said, no, he doesn't like going there. So I said, well, I'll come over and help you. Now, I had to take two buses to get to her house and two buses from her house. Her husband hadn't worked for many years, and I knew that they didn't have much money. So when the first bus dropped me in town, I stopped at a nice door and got them some nice things to eat and brought them to their house, and I did her vacuuming and her shopping and all the different things that she was wanting done, and tried to care for the both of them as well as I could. Well, I did this for 4 days in a row. Now, at the end of those 4 days, I was feeling wearied. My housework wasn't getting done. I was irritable with the kids. And I began to ask myself, what good are you doing your sister and your husband? Is this human doing gooding? Because if that's all it is, that won't do anybody any good. So I decided the very next day I was going to stay at home. And they did not want Christian Science treatment, but I was going to pray to clear my thoughts. So I called her, I said to her, I'm sorry, I'm not coming over today. And at first she sounded a bit upset, but I had made up my mind. And I got out my books and I read the lesson sermon. And I said to myself, are you seeing two sick people, two helpless people? If that's what you're seeing, there's something wrong with your thinking. So I began to know that even though they did not want Christian Science healing or treatment, that they both believed in God and they loved God. And I knew that God had infinite ways to meet their needs right where they were at, in a way that they could understand. That night my sister called and she said, we're both feeling so much better. And she said, do you know what happened? She said, the doctor called by to see us. And he told me that there's a new law out, or a new rule, that if you're looking after someone who's very ill and can do nothing for themselves, that you can get a pension for doing that. And he said that I'm entitled to that pension. The next day, the doctor sent out a social worker. She was entitled to that pension. She was entitled to a mobility, a pension for getting him around, for using taxis or whatever, if she had to take him out. They came, they brought him a wheelchair, they brought him a special chair for sitting in. And they backpaid her for 18 months, all that money. Now that was a great lesson to me, that the best way to reach someone or to pray for someone is to stay at home and do it. And lift your thoughts. That's the best kind of nursing and the best kind of healing. I don't mean that the nurses shouldn't go out and do their work. But we do have to nurse the right idea of man and the truth. That's what we have to nurse. That's what we're nursing every day. We're all nurses. And we have to nurse and cherish the truth that God is love and that he's caring for everyone. Now there's just one other story I'd like to tell you. When I was in my early days of practice, I had been praying one week with 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I had been reading the little book, The Greatest Thing in the World. I had to do this because of the problem in my marriage as well as for my practice. I had to keep myself very much on top of this. And I had been praying all that week, and on a Saturday morning, I just felt as if I loved the whole wide world. I was so full of love. And I had a call from a young man, and he said, "You don't know me. I don't go to your church. I'm not even of your religion. But someone of your religion gave me your phone number and said that maybe you could help my wife and I." He said, "We have 3 children, and in the last 3 months, 2 of them have died with a hole in the heart. And we've just been told that our 3rd child has a hole in the heart and won't live very long." And he said, "We just can't take it or face it anymore." So I invited them to come to my home. And I talked to them and told them that God is love and that he is the father and the mother of those children. Now this little boy, it was a cold day and his mother was wearing a fur coat and she had the child up inside her coat. They told me he was 7, but he looked like he was about 4. He was so frail and so thin and so weak. And that poor mother, she could hardly look at me, the agony that was in her eyes. So I talked to him a lot about God is love and told him that God loved them all and cared for those children. And there was only one heart, and that was the heart of divine and infinite love. And that heart couldn't be damaged, and there was no hole in it, there was no gap in it. And I was saying to her that this seeming vacuum is already filled with divine love. Well, that little boy fell asleep. And after a while, they said they would go home, and they said they wanted me to pray for them. As they were about to go through the door, I happened to ask them, "Do you go to church?" And they said, "No, not very often." And they told me that they were of a different religion entirely to me. And I saw a look of fear come across the wife's face. So after they'd been home, about an hour after that, I had a call, and a woman said that the little boy had gone into a deep state of unconsciousness, and he was very feverish and very hot, and she was crying. And I tried to calm her again, and I knew the truth, and I said to her, "Call me back in half an hour." She called me back in half an hour, and the situation was worse. And this time she was so panic-stricken that I suddenly realized she felt she had to get a doctor. And I said to her, "My dear, do you feel you need to call in a doctor?" She said, "Yes, I do." To me, she said, "Just doesn't seem to be enough to pray. I have to do something humanly as well." And I said, "Well, that's okay by me." She said, "I think maybe you better stop praying." So I came off the phone and I was in tears. And I said, "Father, what do I do about this? How do I handle this?" And then I thought about my mother and how I thought, "I don't care what she's done." And I suddenly said, "I don't care what this young woman says. She's not really saying to me, 'I want you to stop praying.' She's saying, 'I want to see somebody doing something to restore my child.' I'm going to finish my work." And I went on and I finished my treatment and my work. And the next day I didn't hear anything. Days went by and I didn't hear anything. And then a member of my church told me that she had been in the little Bangor church, which I am now a member of. And that a member there, who was the man who had introduced this couple to me, stood up and said about this wonderful healing that this child was healed of the hole in the heart. And I hadn't been told. So I called him and asked him, was it true? And he said, yes. He said, I thought that you knew. He said, you know, the wife is very frightened of her church. And I said, well, I could understand that. But the important thing was that the child was alive. Well, shortly after that, I was moving house. And this friend, this Christian scientist who had introduced this couple to me, told me that that young man had his own business of doing removals and taking furniture to England and so forth, and that he would do my removal for me. So I asked him to set this up for me, and this young man came into the house. He came bounding up the stairs. He said, I'm so glad of this opportunity to talk to you at last. He said, you know, when the doctor came that night to our home, the child was in a natural sleep. And the doctor said, just leave him and bring him to the hospital on Monday. And when they x-rayed him, they couldn't find a hole in his heart. And the child began to put on weight and run about and was playing. And this man said, we couldn't come to you. My wife is so frightened of her church that she can't come. But he said, because I'm so grateful, I'm not charging you for moving your furniture. And he didn't. And when I moved house, that young couple lived very close to me. And I could watch the child out playing football and rugby and all sorts of things. It was lovely. And one day at lunchtime, there was a little knock on my front door just like this. And I went out and the little boy was standing there. And he had a bar of chocolate and it was half melted. And he said, lady, could I give this to you? I remember you prayed for me and I got better. Wasn't that nice? You see, that was the power of love. I felt such love and such compassion that I just couldn't give up. It was love that did it. It wasn't me. It's the love. If you're not loving, you're not living. So start loving and we'll all start living. And so will everybody else. And love each other. That's what our master told us to do. He said, you're my disciples indeed, if ye love one another. It doesn't matter what differences of opinion we have with other people. Those things are so unimportant. Just love. 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 Thank you.